Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are inside of ML Bailey Consultants, and I am Marceline Bailey. I am a therapist and the owner of ML Bailey Consultants, and we are here with writer, activist, and psychotherapist Farzana Doctor. And as a matter of fact, she is a social work colleague. I'm so excited to have an opportunity to have a conversation with her, and I'm sure that you are going to learn a great deal about her and her work. But first, I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. First of all, she is a woman who is very interested in environmental issues, in violence against women, as well as gender violence. She is also a volunteer with WeSpeakOut.org. WeSpeakOut.org strives to gain rights for women, and they seek to end the practice of female genital mutilation. Also, Farzana is also a supporter of LGBTTIQ rights. She has been an activist since she was a teenager, which is so wonderful because she is a social worker. She shows that she has a social worker's heart. We're here today to talk about her fourth novel, Seven. She is a critically acclaimed author of three other novels as well. As I said before, Seven is her fourth, and it begins with it. I started reading a little bit of it, and I'm going to tell you all, a novel that starts with "I take a cautious sip" has to be good, and I'm sure we're going to hear a little bit more about Seven, as well as a little bit more about her other three works of art. Farzana, I want to welcome you, and I'd like for you to tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself.
Thank you so much. Thank you for that wonderful introduction, Marceline. That's so lovely and so generous. I do have a social worker's heart, and I laughed a little bit when you mentioned that. I think it was the natural career paths for me, because since I was a teenager, I was interested in social justice issues, and I'm very pleased that I've managed to create a kind of life where in the morning I'm a writer, which is my other interest, and in the afternoon I get to be a psychotherapist in private practice. Mm-hmm. And what else should I tell you about? So my novel Seven is coming out in September. The release date in the U.S. is September 29th, and it's a little bit earlier here in Canada where I live. And it's a novel about a middle-aged woman who goes on a marriage-saving trip with her husband and her seven-year-old daughter to India, and she is a history buff, and she imagines that what's going to keep her busy is homeschooling her kid and doing some research about her great-great-grandfather. But she's in India in 2016, which is a time where the issue of khatna, or female genital cutting, really started to heat up in India because of the activism that a couple of different groups were doing at the time. And so she finds herself in the midst of that with cousins on polar ends of the debate, and she has to figure out her position. So that's the premise of the book.
Isn't it fascinating that in so many different parts of the world, including in North America, that women are still having to fight for the right to determine what happens to their bodies?
Yes, and you know, one of the things we understand about female genital mutilation / cutting is that it happens on every single continent except maybe Antarctica. And as more and more women have been speaking out about these issues, and you know, it's such a taboo silenced issue. And as more and more women speak out about it, we are learning that it's taking place in all kinds of places that we'd never heard about before. So in 2015, it became known in India. We're learning that it happens in Colombia, in Russia, across Europe, and also in North America. I don't know if you heard, a few years ago, there was a woman named Renee Bergstrom who comes from a white Christian community, and she spoke out about it happening to her. Mm-hmm. So I think as it becomes less stigmatized to talk about all of this, we'll start to hear that it's happening way more than we even imagined.
And I think it's a very important, it's such an important topic that, you know, it's so interesting. Although I am in the social work field, it is not something that is, when I was in social work school, it's not something that was taught.
Yes, me too, me too. And it's really a shame because I think that if we understand how common it is, and I'm not sure what the stats are for the U.S., but in Canada we estimate that about 100,000 women are impacted by this issue, are survivors. And so that's a lot of people for Canada, right? Our population's smaller. Mm-hmm. And so that means that, you know, this is affecting somebody in our neighborhood, somebody maybe in our workplace. And social workers really need to learn more about this issue so that we can be asking better questions and inviting conversations because, you know, like other forms of sexual violence, you know, victims/survivors aren't likely to come forward and talk about it unless there's some kind of safety or opening for it. So it's pretty important. And I've written a couple of articles just kind of on the issues to help people understand the background a little bit. But I really wanted to, you know, work on this issue through fiction because I'm just like a more comfortable fiction writer. And I also think that like fiction sometimes helps us to understand things and gain empathy for things we don't necessarily have personal experience with. And it can light a fire under us in a way that maybe a social work article doesn't. So I'm hoping that this novel will be a contribution in that way too.
I'm sure it will. And I believe that in looking at not only at Seven, but your other works, you have a way of creating characters that are very full-bodied. There's a lot, they're complex. They're not one dimension, but they're very complex. And they are so real in their scope. I think that people can, as they read, they can begin to identify with some of the struggles that the characters in the book struggle with. And so I think with that in mind, I think although you're weaving a very real concern, a very real issue, people are going to, as you said, get more because of how you write your fictional work. It's very amazing. It's just they sound so real, so full-bodied.
Thank you.
I think that the listeners, and I wanted to say that because as someone who reads a lot, I love to read. I love to read novels and interesting stories. Your work seems to go beyond just a story. It's almost as if you can feel what they're feeling. So if you could talk a little bit about that, how do you go about developing your characters?
I think it's something that has just happened, you know, with practice over time. But I think some of it is just having a very big imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think it doesn't hurt to be a psychotherapist who has met, you know, I've lost count how many clients I've had since I started. I graduated in 93.
Mm-hmm.
I got my master's back then. And, you know, since then I've seen a lot of clients both within social service agency, hospital environments, and then in private practice. And so I think, although I don't write about any of those clients' stories, I think we're natural story receivers, you know? We just
yes.
keep hearing, we're holding all these stories. So it's not difficult, you know? And I think sometimes the stories just come, and some writers believe that we are just receivers when we're writing, that if we are still long enough, if we wait long enough, stories will arrive. And I certainly have had weird experiences where I've almost given up on writing a book, have gotten so stuck and just didn't know where to go. And then I've heard a character in my head saying, you know, this is your missing character and this is what I do, and that sort of thing. So there's a bit of a spiritual element to it as well that is really helpful in the writing process.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the other motivation just around that is I have really wanted to write diverse characters. I want to write characters that, like, exist in my world. So, mm-hmm. you know, my characters have, it's a multiracial universe in my stories. People of different sexual orientations, people grappling with really hard emotional issues. I also like to write people's sexualities in something we don't get to talk a whole lot about. In this book, what's going on for, you know, one of the characters is a lot of sexual healing as well. So I'd like to talk about some of the things that we don't talk about enough.
And I agree with you. And I think it's obviously your style of writing is obviously getting attention. For example, your book 6 Meters of Pavement won the mm-hmm. 2012 Lambda Literary Award. It was shortlisted on the 2012 Toronto Book Award, and then was chosen as the One Book One Brampton in 2017. All Inclusive was the National Post Best Book of the Year, and also won the Kobo Award in 2015. So your work is obviously getting a lot of attention, a lot of acclaim, and all of these recognitions are well deserved.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it's always amazing when that happens, right? Because when you're writing, you're just kind of in your own little cave with your characters, and you never know what's going to happen. You never know if people are going to like a book. You hope that they do, and you know, you hope that your skills are improving with each book. But it's hard to know what's going to be taken up. There might be a book out there that is really, really popular 1 year, and it might have to do with the social context of what's going on. It might have to do with if they won an award. Like, you just never know what's going to be pushed forward. There are so many good books. There are so many good authors. So whenever any of the books get any attention, I'm always really, really pleased for that. And one other thing is I've done very well in Canada. As I mentioned, mm-hmm. we have a much smaller audience here. I think our population here is maybe a tenth of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so my goal with 7 is to try to break into the U.S. market just a little more.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, cross your fingers for me that more people in the U.S. hear about it. And one of the things that I think is going to happen because of COVID is that all of our events are virtual, right? And
mm-hmm.
So that means like anyone, anywhere in the world, depending on the time zone, can probably listen in. And with, you know, podcasts like yours, really it doesn't matter what time zone you're in.
Right.
So all of this is accessible all over the world now. So I'm interested to see what this these difficult circumstances will mean for books and book launches.
Well, I, on a personal note, I think that more people are reading because many of us here in the United States have been sheltering in place. So we've been doing quite a bit of reading. I know we're talking about Seven, and that's your new novel that's going to be released here in the United States on September 29th. But I wanted to just read a little bit about 6 meters of pavement. And this is something that somewhat it resonated with me. In the book summary, it says that 20 years ago, Boxwala accidentally left his baby locked in his car, resulting in her death. The tragedy destroys his marriage and induces a long struggle with drink. Still, Ismail keeps his job and home and eventually finds himself drawn to Celia Souza, a 50-year-old Portuguese widow left penniless by her gambling addict husband. When I read that, I started thinking that these are many issues that everyday people deal with. And when you said that you like to write about things that are taboo, things that we don't really talk about, that statement there gives just such a broad picture of, you know, I could probably walk through my neighborhood and point people out who are struggling with those very things. And I find that fascinating, and that's not something you always see in a work of fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Where does that come
from? It's funny. How did that all that come together? So I think I had read an article about, you know, every summer, unfortunately, there's a couple of these stories of, I think, sleep-deprived parents mm-hmm. who forget their kids in the backseat of the car. And I read about one of these articles, one of these fathers. And while I thought about the child, what I mostly wondered was, like, how do you get over the worst mistake of your life? Like, how do you go on living? And so I just started to write about Ismail, this character, and I picked up the story 20 years later because I wanted to spare the reader just a little bit of the direct pain. I wanted all of that to happen 20 years later. So that was my idea. That was my conscious idea. And the Portuguese widow part was that I was living at the time in this neighborhood that was one of the little Portugal neighborhoods in Toronto. So I would see these very young-looking Portuguese widows dressed all in black kind of going up mm-hmm. and down the street, and I also wondered about their lives, and somehow she got into the book. But just as a way to talk a little bit about how this stuff can also be magical, is that when the book finally got published, I went to visit my father. He lives in Texas, and I was doing a little bit of touring in Texas, and he had read maybe the first 100 pages of the book. Mm. And he says to me, "So did your mother ever tell you about that time?" And I said, "What time?" He said, "You know, when you were a baby, we forgot you in the backseat of the car."
Oh.
And he said, yeah. So he says, "We came back. We had to revive you. You were okay." You know, I'm just sitting there, you know, kind of like stunned.
Right.
And I had never been told that story. I didn't know that story. And I thought, was I also writing from some kind of bizarre, like, I shouldn't say bizarre because none of it's bizarre, but some kind of body memory, some very subconscious process? Because, you know, people joked with me and said, like, why does the premise of this book have to be so difficult? It'll never sell. It's okay. So I think sometimes, you know, we're working on so many levels that are conscious and unconscious and subconscious and spiritual. And so the elements of story come together that way.
You have, there are several women that you admire. Esther Perel, Masuma Ramnalvi, yes, and Zadie Smith. Tell me why.
Okay, well, Esther Perel is this amazing psychotherapist. Probably lots of your audience will have come across her. She's done a couple of TED Talks, written a couple of books. She does this podcast called Where Do We Begin? And she focuses, these days she's focusing a lot on infidelity and helping couples move through infidelity. Previously, she wrote a book called Mating in Captivity, and it was sort of about how to help couples who are still, you know, really good friends, but the erotic is gone in their lives. And I just find her so such a good speaker, and her ideas are really liberating, and she's so beautiful as well. So I often try to embody Esther Perel when I'm working. And then Masuma Ramnalvi is the second person, and she is the founder of We Speak Out. In 2015, she wrote an article that detailed the process of dealing with Kutna, or being, you know, cut. And I immediately wrote to her over Facebook to thank her for breaking silence on the issue. And she wrote back immediately and said, do you want to join this WhatsApp group? We're starting a group to try to, you know, get something done on the issue. And that was just 2015. So I joined. I became the Twitter handler for the group. I'm part of the core steering committee of the group. And she changed my life, because it was the process of joining We Speak Out that I began to deal with my long-suppressed memories around Kutna. And I became really strong around all of these issues. It was a painful process, but it was also a really liberating process, as it is when we do our trauma work. So that's Masuma Ramnalvi. She was the first one to ever, the first one to publicly write about the issue at a time when the Indian media took the issue up and really went with it. So she really helped to raise awareness in India. And then Zadie Smith. Well, you know, she's just an amazing writer, Zadie Smith. and when I was writing my first novel, I was really enamored, I still am, with White Teeth, which is, I think, her first novel. And it was like an international bestseller, her first novel, you know. And what I loved about it was that she found a way to talk about difficult things but blended humor through it all. And I've sought to emulate that in all of my novels, to just be poking fun at things and having a little fun in the process, because you can't talk about difficult issues without a little fun.
Yes.
So I also try to embody her when I'm writing. Got a little Esther in me, a little Zadie in me, and a little Masuma inside of me when I'm doing my work.
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Love it. So where do you go? Tell us what's going to happen on September 29th. Where can the listeners find your book? Tell us all about that.
Well, so yeah, September 29th is the official release date. So that means that it should be available in stores on that date. It might be available a few days before, a few days after. So I would say, you know, check out your local independent stores first, and it should be available there. But if people would like to join in and watch the launch, I've got two launches. I'm calling one the Canadian launch and one the U.S. launch, but obviously it doesn't matter where you live, because it'll all be online. And I'll be doing a whole bunch of other events as well throughout that time. But for these two launches, the Canada launch is September 17th, and it's going to be on at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Okay.
And then the U.S. launch is October 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I have amazing hosts for each. I have a woman who is an actor and activist. Her name is Fawzia Mirza. She's going to be hosting the Canada launch. And the U.S. launch is hosted by Marie-Lou Nahas. And for anyone who is an Orange is the New Black fan, she was on season 7. She played Shani. So I've got some fun stuff organized for the launches.
Okay. Now, where can they view the launch? Where can they be a part of it? How can they do that?
So all the details should be up soon, but if people just go to my website, maybe that's the best place. So that's just farzanadoctor.com, mm-hmm. and I'll have all of the details about which platform it's going to be on. Probably it'll be like something like Facebook Live, but we haven't quite decided that yet. So okay. if people just go to my website, they'll see all the events listed.
Wow, great. Well, I will be there.
Wonderful.
And we'll see if we can get some more people there, because I'm sure
Great.
It's going to be wonderful. Well, Farzana, we're about out of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to share today?
No, just a huge thanks to you and your work. What you're doing is really unique, and it's really supportive. So thanks again.
Well, I definitely want to thank you for being my guest today. Thank you for sharing. I'm looking forward to 7. I'm also going to be talking about you, talking about your novel that's coming out, and sharing it with my listeners as well as readers of my blogs, because I think it'll bring new awareness to just other people's lives. And I think when we have an awareness about what other people experience, it helps us to build community and to connect. So I am mm-hmm. so very thrilled to be just a small part of your journey. With that, I want to thank you for being on again. Again, for our listeners, go to www.farzanadoctor.com, and you'll find all of the information you'll need about the novel 7 that will launch in the U.S. on September 29th. And also, make sure you tune in on October 1st at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because that will be the official U.S. launch. You can also check out the Canadian launch on September 17th at 7 p.m. EST. Well, that's all for now. I'm glad that you've joined us today. I'm Marceline Bailey, and as always, take good care.